Blog Talk Radio.
Tom Farrell.
And now, Tom Farinella.
Hello, everybody. This is Tom Farinella. Welcome to the Tom Farinella Radio Show right here at blogtalkradio.com. We've been on all day, yes. I've been trying to get used to this new way of doing talk radio over the internet. It's such a great pleasure to have you all aboard. Welcome. Phone lines are indeed open. If you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. The chat room is up and running. 347-326-9037. Well, very interesting story that I just saw on the Drudge Report about President Bush regretting his legacy as a man who wanted war. Huh. This is very interesting. President Bush has admitted to the Times that his gunsling rhetoric made the world believe that he was a guy really anxious for war in Iraq. He said that his aim now was to leave his successor a legacy of international diplomacy for tackling Iran. In an exclusive interview, he expressed regret at the bitter divisions over the war and said that he was troubled about how his country had been misunderstood. I think that in retrospect, I could have used a different tone, a different rhetoric. Phrases such as bring them on or dead or alive, he said, indicated to people that I was, you know, not a man of peace. He said that he found it very painful to put youngsters in harm's way. He added, I try to meet with as many families as I can, and I have an obligation to comfort and console as best as I possibly can. I have an obligation to make sure that those lives were not lost in vain. The unilateralism that marked his first White House term has been replaced by an enthusiasm for tough multilateralism. He said that his focus for his final 6 months in office was to secure agreement on issues such as establishing a Palestinian state and to leave behind a series of structures that make it easier for the next president. Mr. Bush is concerned that the Democratic nominee Barack Obama might open cracks in the West united front towards Tehran's nuclear ambitions. At the EU-US summit in Slovenia, he pressed for tougher sanctions against Iran unless it agreed to suspend its uranium enrichment program verifiably. They can either face isolation or they can have better relations with all of us. Mr. Bush told the Times that when his successor arrived and assessed what will work or what won't work in dealing with Iran, he would stick with the current policy. Shaul Mavaz, a hardline Israeli minister, has suggested that a military strike on Iran is unavoidable. But Mr. Bush said, we ought to work together, keep focused. His comments really should have been viewed as the need to continue to keep pressuring Iran. The president was keen to bind his successor into a continued military presence in Afghanistan and Iraq, but offered only cautious optimism about a recent decline in violence. Asked about corruption allegations dogging Hamid Karzai, the Afghan president, Mr. Bush insisted, I found him to be an honest man. He also offered words of encouragement for another ally, Gordon Brown, whom he met with on Sunday. He said that he needed no advice on coping with political adversity. He is plenty confident and plenty smart, plenty capable. He can sort it out. But he delivered a thinly veiled warning to Mr. Obama that his promise to renegotiate or block international trade deals were already causing alarm in Europe and beyond. Well, it goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. But the message here is, it seems as if the president is backtracking a little bit in regret. So what is this? You know, listen. You know, the president came in to this into his administration with 9/11 shortly after he was sworn in, 7 months or so, and it defined the administration. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a point-blank realization that is unavoidable. And the thing of it is, the president seems to feel as if he, you know, I guess he looks back over his time in office, and maybe he has regrets, maybe he doesn't. But if you can remember the time period in which we're dealing with here, it was a very sensitive time period, and especially here in New York, where we had 9/11 in our face, and it was an absolute nightmare. And the president tried to deal with it. The president tried to deal with it as best as possible. He had just, you know, been sworn in. His transition team wasn't even fully in place. His administration was still transitioning out of the old administration. And I don't think that he was out of line by using Bring Them On or Dead or Alive. I think that he was trying to reassure the American people that whoever caused those terrorist attacks on the World Trade Center would be brought to justice swiftly. And I think that's what he should have conveyed. Not that he was sorry about that. Perhaps the misunderstanding is definitely clear. Yes, there was an international misunderstanding, but in unknown certain terms, so I think that he was out of line by saying that he wanted the people responsible for bombing those buildings, and rightfully so. I was there, 9/11. I saw the disaster and the tragedy that fell upon New York, and it was some of the most gut-wrenching times of my life. I can't tell you, and if not the most gut-wrenching time of my life. I was living on 49th Street at the time. After the first plane hit, I was watching MSNBC, one of the cable news networks, and I looked. I went out to 8th Avenue at about whatever time it was, 8 a.m. or it was extremely early, and I remember looking down 8th Avenue because you could see the World Trade Center, and I had just moved to New York 7 months prior. Myself, I'm sorry, in August. I had officially moved to New York in August. And I had been there just 1 month in my new apartment, and the World Trade Center was my map, was my guide point. Whenever you needed to figure out where downtown was, you could just look at the sky and find the World Trade Center. And then you could say, okay, I have to walk east. That's south. And it was the compass. You knew where south was. I mean, I guess there are other landmarks, but for me, that's what I just became accustomed to. And so when I was out there on 8th Avenue, and I was looking at those buildings, and then they fell, I was perplexed. I couldn't believe that the guide points the shining star that had been my North Star while I was transitioning from New York, from D.C. to New York, was absolutely gone, was mind-blowing. And I had just moved from where I was living in Roslyn, Virginia, which was just I was living literally in back of the Pentagon. So I moved from where one location ends up happening into another, and I was just absolutely, absolutely mortified. And not for my brother having passed away exactly 2 months prior to the day, I probably would have been even more and sane. But because when you're ripped out of your roots and there's no reasonable explanation for it, the trauma is literally unspeakable. It's unexplainable. And so for the president to come out and to try to comfort his people and comfort the nation during a time when everyone was ripped from their homes and from what they knew to be safe, and use strong language, I don't blame them. I don't blame him at all. Now, if he has regrets, I don't think it's so much regrets that he said what he said. I think it's regrets to the extent that he should have been more clear about what his intentions were. And, you know, I've said all, to many different people who have asked me over his presidency, I said I think he's a poor communicator. It's obvious he's a poor communicator. He has difficulty articulating himself in public. We know that. He's not necessarily the best speech maker. He doesn't give great speeches. He's certainly no Ronald Reagan. He's certainly no Bill Clinton. What does that mean? I think that he presided in the White House over probably the most difficult time in America's history since the Great Depression. Because the Great Depression was on our soil. The Great Depression was something that affected every American. As did this. For a minute or two, the country actually responded properly. But did they maintain the response? No, it became political, it became partisan, and that was it. But I saw what happened firsthand. My brother was living downtown in Tribeca, three blocks away from the Trade Center. The apartment he was living in, you were able to look at the Trade Center, and the World Trade Center was in his window. I saw the cars coming out filled with soot as I stood on Duane Street. We walked up his building that had no electricity. I walked over to the windows that I once looked out and saw these illuminating, beautiful buildings that represented progress. It represented the financial, economic industry. It represented America and capitalism, an international symbol. Was no more. It was gone. They were gone. In a heartbeat. In a moment of time. And I think the president actually exercised great restraint. You can take your theories and you can go wherever you want with them, but the human effect of that day will never be forgotten by any New Yorker that was in New York City, or not even in New York City, but out of the city that day. And you will see the effect of this tragedy for years to come. And that's what he had to preside over after 7 months. Now, you can love him or you can hate him, but that's what was. So when he at least said he wants, I guess he said Osama bin Laden dead or alive, bring them on. I at least felt confident that the guy who everybody said was so stupid, at least had enough sense to make, at least tried to give the appearance that the American government was going to be strong in defending, and not retaliating, but defending our way of life, our safety, and our future. And I'll tell you right now, again, you could love George Bush or you could hate him. But I'll tell you right now, when Saddam Hussein refused to disarm when Saddam Hussein refused to allow the United Nations in to inspect, and he said, fine, this is the 12th, the 13th, the 15th, whatever, however many resolutions it was, I think it was 12, that's it. The party's over. He gave him ample amount of time to surrender. Everybody forgets this. Saddam Hussein could have just opened his country, let the inspection for the UN inspectors in, inspect to see that he wasn't enriching uranium, that he wasn't looking to, he didn't have weapons of mass destruction or nuclear weapons and so on and so forth, but he chose not to, which gave the president reason to believe that there was something to hide. The weapons were there. They were shipped out. And when President Bush went in there and disarmed Iraq, and Saddam Hussein was thrown out of power, it was a message that rung true for the last 8 years. Or 7.5. Don't mess with us. If you can play games, you can play the Texas. I can play the Texas two-step as well as you can. And I'm from Texas, right? But the bottom line is, when they saw that this president was not going to allow the pushover effect to occur, like Clinton did with the UN inspections, and then firing an aspirin factory and killing some poor guy who was working overnight. That's when they realized that they better think twice before doing anything, plotting any sort of attack while this guy's still in the White House. I don't know if it's the right way to do things, but as far as him having to deal with what he had to deal with, he did it well, or as well as he could. So when you look back and have regret, it's because you made bad mistakes. I don't think these are mistakes. I think these are a president who is responding in troubled times. I mean, this guy has been destroyed from every facet because he kept reading a book and so on and so forth. Meanwhile, there was never a single mention or a single question to the former president of the United States who resided in the same office for 8 years prior, who was closer to the situation than Bush was. The guy who just left after 8 years opposed to the guy who's been there for only 7 months, there's a big difference. something went wrong. The administration before dropped the ball. Now, whether or not there's a cover-up because both administrations eventually dropped the ball, I don't know. All I know is that we're in the middle of the most delicate, insane times in this country's history. We have an immigration problem that is absolutely out of control. That until every free piece of soil in this country is filled up because there's no more room, this government to continue to allow these people to immigrate illegally is absolutely insane. There's a drug trade coming through the borders that is a billion-dollar industry that is ignored. At what point do we stop and say, what the heck can we do? And whatever we can do, we have to do it. But nobody wants to be that person anymore. George Bush is certainly worn out. He has to worry about being the party leader and not isolating votes. Everybody's always worried about an election, the next election, and the next election, and the next election. Politicians are always running for election, it seems. They never have enough money, and they're always running for re-election. So what do? Do you lengthen the terms? I don't know, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Lincoln himself. They were all able to figure it out. I guess times were, in fact, different. But there's a clear line drawn in the sand here, folks. And I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know who it's going to take. But something better happen. Because if it doesn't, if you thought 9/11 was bad, it's going to be much worse. Because there's too many things left open. We're exposed to too many areas. We're vulnerable in ways that we never were. And that does not even get into the domestic problems. I mean, the Obama situation shows you where we are from a domestic standpoint. I mean, you know, the black community continues to say that they are disenfranchised, yet they have made remarkable progress with Barack Obama being elected as a Democratic nominee, don't you think? The Bush administration had the first black national security advisor and the first black secretary of state. And it's going to keep on going up the chain because that's just the natural progression of society. And this country is doing everything it can to make opportunity available for everybody and to cure the ills of the past. But this Obama is no savior. He's in somebody's pocket, or somebody has him in their pocket, and he doesn't know enough to handle what's about to come. Is Hillary? Probably not. Oh, we have a caller. Let's go to the caller. Hello, welcome to the Tom Farinella Show. How are you?
All right, fine, thank you.
What's your name?
Noel.
Hi, Noel. This is Tom. How are you doing tonight?
Doing good. I'm listening. I have a comment in regards to some of the remark you make. After a 25-year stint with the United States military, I still here live down at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, right? And when, you know, for me personally, when I sit up there in the Middle East, right, when I was there and I'm seeing young men, black, white, Chinese, Puerto Rican, you know, of Muslim religion, of Catholic religion, dying for a country. And then I come back and I hear some of the rhetoric, right? you know, it's not good. It's not good for us. We sit up in the tents. We sit up in the field. We sit up all protecting this country. But when I hear this black and white issue, it's really, it's not good for the soldiers. It's not good for the individual protecting this country. Because all it is, you know, all it is just showing an ugly face.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I think you know, for individuals who have sacrificed for this country, right, you know, we can't keep hearing the rhetoric from the Fox and the CNN and some of the bloggers and different things like that, you know, because the soldiers listen, you know, because when I sit up here and used to go on patrol and I take a white, I take a black, I take an individual who professed to be a Muslim, I take a Catholic or I take a Baptist out there, them guys, you know what, they're protecting my back as well as I'm protecting theirs. We don't see this thing that's going on here in this country, right? But when we come back, we just shake our head. I sit up here close to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and I see, you know, friends of mine, black or white. I'm going to their funerals. They come back in. Their wife can't even recognize them in the coffin because they got to rebuild their faith.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
I have a cousin of mine who signed up, and he's in the Marines, and he just finished his 7-month tour in Iraq. And the question I'm discussing is that the president today said that he regrets some of the terms he may have used. Now, let me ask you a question. As a member who wears a uniform proudly, when the president used such phrases as bring them on or that he wanted Osama bin Laden dead or alive, what did that do for your morale?
What does that do for me? I was never, you know, based on the Constitution, okay, you know, we have to have the president going to be the commander in chief or whatever it is. But I wasn't inclined on that because half of those guys that sit up here as president of the United States really don't know nothing about the military, you know. And yes, you know, they have the power to send us everywhere, anywhere, or whatever it is, and we go. But yes, you know, the politicians really, you know, for me personally, sometimes I think they don't care about us. Yeah, you know, you're going to run over
to... Let me ask you a question. So maybe so much not Bush, but, like, for example, when Senator Dick Durbin compared the troops to Gitmo, to the gulags, and because of the way they were treating the prisoners in Abu Ghraib,
mm-hmm.
You're talking about stuff like that just really just sends you guys into a confused state.
Well, you know what, you know, truly, if you ever sit down with soldiers, right, we don't get into that stuff. We really don't. You know, the only thing that we do, we look when we sit up here in the field, when we sit up here and talk to each other, right? I'm a straight talker. We said, you know what, the American public don't know, man. They're just ridiculous sitting up in here and fighting with each other, right? If they want to fight so bad with each other, why they don't come over here and help us, right? That is most of the rhetoric.
And you know what? That's one of the things as we look to this new election, and I know. You guys don't think about politics, but you have to at least respect the fact that McCain was a prisoner of war, and his son though is served over there,
uh-huh.
and at least, you know, he puts up, you know, he has his own flesh and blood out there, you know, and, you know, it seems that he's, you know, qualified based upon the fact that, you know, he's not keeping his kid from going.
Well, no, that's not, you know, and that's not the, you know, I mean, we got a lot of, but the biggest thing is, McCain is a senator, no, he's not keeping his kids, but we got different individuals who kids in the military also. It's just not him. You know, you got different individuals who family members are in the military also. So we don't,
yeah.
You know, we don't play into that, because once you're a politician, you're a politician. I don't care if
yeah.
you've been a prisoner for war, I don't care what you've been in, I have respect for you, right? But then some of the things that you do as a politician, right, you know, then you on the other side.
Yeah, you know, I don't. That's what I don't understand. Senator Warner from Virginia, his kid's over there as well. And, you know, he's a Democrat, and I'm confused as to how these guys can sit on their pulpits and lecture the world, lecture us, the American people,
uh-huh.
and shed their own troops with defending the flag and the nation that they represent as hard as they possibly can, and rather than take political pop shots, which they seem they can't resist, they just throw the troops under the bus.
Well, you know, it's a you know the biggest thing is, to me personally, if they had listened to Colin Powell, you know, it would have been 99.9% over by now. Okay.
Well, I mean, Colin Powell was one of the chief architects with Bush 41. I mean, President Bush 41, say what you will, but he still is the only president in the United States to have the shortest war in American history with no casualties. And that was the first, that was the liberation of Kuwait, the 100-hour war. And you know, Colin Powell was right in the mix of all that. So,
but he didn't go. Go ahead.
I sincerely think that there was a time when 41 and 40 and George W. really, I don't know, you were probably overseas, but it seems that there was some sort of strange tension. And I think 41 warned against going in there because originally he didn't want to move in there and take out Saddam.
You know, the biggest thing with us, what happened, we didn't understand that when you go into a place, right, and I put it to them this way. If you've been living in a place for 20 years or living in a house all your life, you turn the lights off, right, pitch dark. You know every corner, every door, where the light switch at. You know, you can walk around there blindfolded and you can get around your house, right? Now, if somebody break into your house and coming in, it's pitch dark. They're at your advantage.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? And it's the same thing.
Right.
My thing is, we stood up here and never trained, right, for the urban warfare. So
no, this is what you have to put up with is an absolute. It's, I don't even think you could train for it. I mean, it's so unique in how you have to go into homes and you have to, you know, just everything. Just, you know, children are weapons in this.
And that's what it is. You know, the biggest thing is they knew that they couldn't, right, match the United States of America. So do you think they were focusing on the planes and the tanks? No. Personally, if common sense dictates, if I knew I'm not going to sit up here and match individual strike for strike, I'm going to do something else, because guess what's getting ready to happen? After you come with your shuck and all, then you have to come in. Then you have to send the Marines and the Army in by foot, right?
Right.
And that's where I have my advantage, okay?
Right.
And that's why you see so many young soldiers, because here you are, a little piece of paper on the street, you know, tied to a string. We don't understand. A little can running down the road, you don't understand it. You walk in, right, and the dirt look, you know, when the sand dunes come, right, and it blows over, right, guess what? It looks the same all over.
Yeah.
But they know exactly where they plant these things at. All right?
And the problem is that we have a press, you know, that since Vietnam, I think that, you know, they need to go in and be embedded with you guys and tell of all these atrocities. I mean, you know, Lord knows that they're not standing there with a gun and having to defend the country, and they're not put in a situation to determine whether or not they need to fire or defend themselves. And yet they're so willing to break these stories that seem to make the military look bad on purpose, and it's a political agenda.
Well, you know what? It's on both sides. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's on all of them sleep in the same bed, right? And people fail to realize that, right?
Well,
yeah,
we
can choose. I'm telling you, they sleep in the same bed, right? You know, after they sit up here and talk all this rhetoric, you know what? They will go out to the cafeteria and eat together. All right.
Well, I mean, I'm with you. I was down in Washington for 7 long years. I worked for 3 different congressmen. I know the drill in that sense. But at least, you know, there hasn't been but one Republican, I think, that has really come out with these absurd statements against the troops, like Dick Durbin and Harry Reid, and, you know, Harry Reid saying we're going to lose. And it's just this mentality of defeatism. It's depressing.
Well, you know, you're right in the sense, and most of us, yeah, you know, but what I'm saying, right, if you poll the soldiers, you would see independents, you would see Democrats, you would see Republicans. But guess what? These guys sitting up here, right, and they're putting up a BDU, they're sitting out there in the hot old sun, right, 100 and something degrees, then have to do 3 or 4 rotations, right? You know, I have a friend sitting up here going back on his 4th rotation. I just had a friend came back, You know, single son to a mom, and he just had a baby, right? The baby ain't got a chance to see the father. Came home driving a truck. Guess what? Head blew off, right?
Oh.
You know, right? I'm serious. Both of them, and I'm telling you, head gone, right? So this is a natural fact, you know, and my problem is they need to take all, whether or not you're a Republican, Democrat, or whatever it is, they need to take you, and when all those coffins come back, open them up and show them what they look like, right? Maybe then they can change their mind and change the rhetoric, you know?
Well,
and
the problem is that this ground thing is just not, they have to take these hotbeds out with airstrikes, you know, unknown airstrikes, and the problem you have is that the liberals, I know you say it's not politics, but these politically correct people that scream that women and children are in the crosshairs, and you can't do that, and you can't, you have to be humane in how you conduct yourself. And I as long as we play this politically correct war, we're not going to have, the troops are going to be put in this horrible position, which...
Well, we did that. We did that with the Geneva Convention nonsense. Okay.
Well, it's not even that. It's just that the airstrikes, that the collateral problem is that you already had Michael Moore in the first one, with Iraqi women saying, "Oh, this is my son. He was blown up," and the exploitation of the Iraqi civilians who are collateral damage as a result of these people, which everybody fails to realize. If these people are so selfless for their community, and they choose to put these people in this position, aren't they the ones who are morally responsible for what happens to them?
Yeah, but you know what kind of teed me off, right? All right, the things that the basic civilian don't know, right? And they only get it from the news, and they get it from some of the Congress individual, regardless of Democrat or Republican, right? If you go down here to Fort Irwin, California, do you know how many Iraqis sitting up in there, right? If you go, and my thing is, right, and then some of them using cell phones to call back home, right? Yeah. They're not supposed to have phones, but how the hell they get phones, right? We are the one training different individuals. You go on almost every training military base, right, and you walk around, you will see people from different countries with different uniforms, regardless of what they think. They don't know if these individuals like you or not. Right, but they're training these guys as pilots. They're training these guys as commanders. They're training these guys as everything. And then when they go back home and take over the military and say, "Look, I don't want to be, I don't want to cater to you no more." Guess what happened? Right, you have to go back and clean up. Right.
Yeah.
So
the problem is that you guys are there, and like you said, you may, regardless of your political affiliation, this is your job. You're an American soldier. You've sworn to stand up, the Constitution, defend the Constitution, the flag, everything else.
True.
And that this is your job. And when your commander in chief calls on you, you're not to run and hide.
We gotta go.
You bear the benefits that the government gives you, which is an education, perhaps. See, you have to understand something. When I was in school, I mean, I've been out of school for since 2001. But you have to understand during the 90s. When I was in high school, at college, and law school, I saw hundreds of kids bear the benefit of the ROTC program. And I said, my dad said, they're the smartest guys around because we're in peacetime and they're getting a free education and playing make-believe war once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was, when this all went out, I think soldiers, the military as a whole and the families were not used to an active military, and that's what happened. But the benefits were there, and they are there, and
but
that you guys are, and most of you guys, based upon what I hear, because I listen to, I get different news sources, things are much better than they are reported, and you guys are in good morale, and that you guys are doing your job, and that's where it ends. There is no.
But what is not in good morale, I'm gonna tell you, is the family members back here, okay?
Yeah.
When you sit up here and you got an E4 or E5, regardless of what it is. And family have to struggle, and the people down in the community next to the base are perpetrating all kind of nonsense. The high interest rate, the car dealers is jacking up their cars so high that the family's sitting up in here, and when you should be paying $200 a month, you're paying something at $450 a month because you're sitting up in here and you're saying, well, you know, let's charge them 15-16%, right, on every dollar that they give us, right? And we are not taking it. And then when a guy get out and retired, he's still got to sit up here and pay money to get medical and dental and all that other nonsense, right, when it should have been free. Okay.
Right. You got. I was told that my cousin had to buy his own toilet paper and boots and things. I'm saying, what is going on here?
But that's what I'm saying. That's what we don't understand. Guess what? Organization has to sit up here and make care package, right? And I'm gonna tell you, you know, my biggest pet peeve is you go to Korea, right? The Katusas are the rich Koreans, and the Rock Army is different. I don't know, but the biggest problem is every month. The United States military give the Katusas a care package, toilet paper, toothpaste, shoe polish, and all that nonsense. But yet still, we cannot send all that stuff out there. We got to go to the PX and buy it ourselves. You got to be out your mind.
Well, that's what I can't figure out. You know, and you know that's Congress, because you know, especially that's the House, because that's where all the appropriations for these types of things are started, and there should have been a movement to increase the salary and what, you know, men and women who choose to serve the military get. I know it's a public service job, but it comes to a point where the cost of living is going through the roof, you know, and you guys are out there putting your lives on the line, and families are losing their primary, you know, caretaker and the primary income earner. And that you cannot replace, and it has to be dealt with. Otherwise, you're never going to have a military that is strong, because nobody's going to want to do it.
But guess what, right? Here you are. You appease us with a 3% raise, right? A 3% raise now, okay? But then, right, gas prices is $4 and change, or $4 a gallon, okay? It just jumped up 20-something cents, right?
Right.
You know, and the different thing, for me personally, what I told them, I said, hey, you need to have a relief for the military, right? Especially when a guy's sitting up here doing his third and fourth rotation.
I don't understand. After the Second World War, the Congress passed the GI Bill, which created the Veterans Hospitals and which gave veterans of the Second World War and then wars thereafter free medical care and many, you know, free education and free.
Yeah, but that's what you look. If you sit up here and you active, yeah, you go to the hospital, you sit up here, you wait for half an hour, whatever it is, right? You know, but then you decide you retired after 20, 30 years. Guess what happens, right? You got to fork out some money coming out there. You could be maimed, you could be whatever it is, unless you got 100% disability, and then you go to VA and it takes you forever just to get an appointment,
yeah.
You know, and then you run into people at VA, right? The same Americans that are sitting up in here want to talk to you like you nothing,
yeah.
Right? You know, and you know, it's like you walk up there, you say, "Hi, can I so and so? Why are you here?" and all that other nonsense, right?
Well,
but, you know, it's nonsense.
But I'll tell you one thing: I think that this is definitely the last issue on Barack Obama's plate. I, at least with John McCain, you got a guy who is at least conscious of what the troops need and what the families of the troops need, you know, because I have great concern, and it's not because he's black. I wish I did like him, because, you know, I'm glad to see that, you know, that this barrier was broken, but there's something going on with this guy that just it isn't right. You know, he's 3 years into his Senate term, and, you know, he's at the forefront of the Democratic Party to become president of the United States. I don't know. And it scares me to think that what, you know, look what Bill Clinton did with foreign policy. I mean, the first 4 years was a disaster. With Kosovo and Bosnia, he turned President Bush's Somalia mission into a war.
Well, you know, the biggest, for me, you know, what has to happen is that regardless of what happened with the president of the United States, no president that you sitting up here that knows foreign policy. What they do, they surround themselves with individual who knows foreign policy, right? We can talk all the rhetoric, right? The public can talk all the rhetoric, but if you sit up here, they're dumb, deaf, and blind to the foreign policy. You know what? They surround themselves with individual who knows, and they're sitting up in their meeting, and they tell them, and they show them the way. That's what it's supposed to be. It's just like, that's why they have the Secretary of State. That's why they have the Secretary of different entities. You understand? Because they don't know it all. And for me personally, as a citizen of the United States of America, first and foremost, if you look down the line, all presidents had faults. You understand? And what I'm saying is give the people a chance to vote for who they want to do, and then let the Electoral College make the decision. If they want Barack, they're going to get Barack. If they want McCain, they will get McCain. But what happened, we are fighting among ourselves. And you know what? The world sit up here, and when you go over there, they say, look, y'all can't even agree. Right, y'all can't let a cause take its place, right?
Well,
and that's what's
happening. The problem is there's no more pride, and there's no more dignity in there's no more pride in being dignified anymore. And what has happened here is that they've tried to politicize this. What everybody fails to realize is that when you start politicizing, 100,000 American men and women on the grounds of in Iraq, these are people's lives. These are families who are sitting home. My poor mother, worries day in and day out, every day. 6 months ago, our lives have changed. Now you hear a car bomb on the news. You're praying. We were sitting around praying to dear God that His name's not coming after it.
It's not your son. I'm gonna sit back and listen. But I just wanted to make that comment. But I understand. I really understand. The people and their thoughts and how they are. I'm a calm spirit, and I get into those entities because for 20 something years I see how it played out, and I've been there, and I'm so passionate about the military because I'm tired of seeing my fellow soldiers.
How long have you been in the military, Noel?
How what, sir?
How long have you been in the military?
25 years, sir.
Excellent. Well, you know what? You my appreciation for your service and. Boy, oh boy! I can't tell you how honored I am to have you called. I mean, I really do appreciate it, and you really are the epitome of what America is about. You really do.
Much appreciated, man. And hey, regardless of what it is, man, good, bad, or indifferent, right? I appreciate for people to because through dialogue, regardless if you agree or disagree, things will come out. It leads to a better place.
It sure does, and it's because of people like you that people like me get to do what I do, and the rest of the country gets to go on with their lives.
Yes, sir.
After what happened, 9/11, we had a war zone, and American people are so stupid that image has left their mind. And to me, as long as we allow that to leave,
yes, sir.
I'm afraid of what's to come next, because if they thought that was bad, I can't, and they were able to rebound from it. They're looking to break our will, and they're looking to break our way of life. This is not about politics.
That's understandable, and I think a lot of us don't realize that. But I have to run. But I will listen to your show,
you.
Sir. All right, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You too.
Noel.
Yes,
and God bless you, sir. Stay
you
safe.
Too, sir.
And that's Noel, 25 years in the United States military, serving his country. And he's right. The troops, he said it, the troops, they're not interested in politics. The troops aren't interested in politics. Troops are the troops are there doing their job, and they are just going through each day as they are called to do. And for that, they are noble. They are noble. I do not envy them. Thank God that we have men and women who are courageous enough to put their lives on the line to go and do what they do every day. And he's right. Free health care. How about before we start talking about free health care for everybody, how about we at least get free, competent, good health care for the members of the United States military, first and foremost. We need to take care of the fallen men and women of our armed services. And he's right, not just some VA hospital where you go and sit there for 4 hours. This is the Tom Farinello Show. You're on Blog Talk Radio, and we just had a great call from Noel, the first call of the night, and it was the best call and that I think I'll ever have. I mean, you know, to have a guy call in who's been in the United States service for 25 years, he obviously loves what he does, and you know, I tip my hat to him. I tip my hat to him because it takes guts. It takes a person to go into the deepest part of their soul to be free to make the decision to serve their country with what's at stake. I think it's forgotten. You know, it all started with Vietnam, with McNamara and the politicizing of war, and then the media has to go in there. They need to be on the ground taking pictures. You know, the whole thing is a joke. These are real men and women whose lives are on the line on a daily basis, and they're not looking for politics for their situation to be politicized. I think it's far too easy for politicians to throw the troops under the bus for cheap political points. And to appease the far left wackos of Code Pink and the rest of those people. And at the end of the day, what do we have? Like he said, we have a divided country, like Noel said. The rest of the world looks at it and says, look, they have their troops on the ground. They can't even figure out what to say. They can't even come together to give one line. They don't care. I'll tell you, like some of these senators and politicians and the comments they've made, they are like crazy uncles. They don't care. Dick Durbin's on Al Jazeera. And the rest of them. Harry Reid on Al Jazeera. The war can't be won. I just pray to my God every night that, you know, the sun comes up and the creek doesn't rise, and then we're here to see another day. I talked to you about what went on when I was there. With 9/11, and it was brutal. And I'm just praying that whoever it is that occupies the White House has God's wisdom and they know what they're doing. And it's very shocking. It's just very shocking to hear the way politicians are just so willing to throw their soldiers under a bus and not take care of them. He's right, not take care of them properly when they come home. My dad's a veteran of the Korean conflict. And to get a pair of eyeglasses, it's just absolutely insane what he has to go through. I mean, when you have to meet people at least halfway when they agree to give up their lives and their families. You have to meet them halfway. You have to give them more. Yeah, nobody goes into the military to be wealthy, but they at least are entitled to be taken care of. At least if I were president, that's how I would have it. That's the first thing I would do. A 10% raise for the United States military. 3%. You know, it's funny, though. I'll tell you one thing. When these senators have to re-vote for their income to be increased, you should take a look at the vote. They get their cost of living. They get free health care. They get free everything for life. Dick Durbin and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and the likes. They'll never pay for another thing again because they're going to be, when they leave office, former senators and congressmen who have full coverage and all kinds of packages pensions and all kinds. Ed Koch, the former mayor of New York, three pensions, one from the city of New York for being mayor, another from the United States Congress, and a pension from somewhere else, God only knows where, and his Social Security and everything else. One of the most corrupt administrations in New York history. So at the end of the day, he's right. It's the politicians, and I'll blame them every day of the week. They're no heroes. All they gotta do is point out what's good for them and bad for the other side. That's all they care about. And until you, the American people, wake up. Until the American people starts taking, and I've been saying this for years, start taking interest in what happens to this country and what happens in state elections and local elections and national elections as well, more than 50%. Man, these politicians are going to take advantage. I said earlier today that the more apathetic a populace, the better for the politicians, because they can get more that way. If you're asleep at the wheel, they're going to just rob you blind. Think about it. Everything you do involves a tax. Whether you're talking your cell phone, whether you pay for gas, whether you buy food, and then on top of it, at the end of the year, you have to pay your income tax and everything else, and one tax after another, after another, after another, and then the mayor of New York decides that he's going to raise the cigarette tax, or the governor, and they raise the cigarette tax for the city of New York to a point that's absurd. And he says, well, if one person stops smoking, then that's a job. You know, let people make their own decisions. But I don't know. Well, this show went very quick, and it ended up being the best show of the evening. Sometimes those that the most unexpected things can happen when you're just looking to go one way and you end up going another. We thank Noel for the call. It was superb. Again, our appreciation is out to you and to all the troops, and for all the hard work and the dedication you give to your country. I appreciate it, and I can't thank you enough. And I sure do pray for you at night that, you know, may God keep you all safe. Sometimes the reality of that is not, but I continue to pray. I will continue to pray. And I thank you very much for joining me if you tuned in. This has been the Tom Farinella Show right here at Blog Talk Radio. And we've gone many places tonight. And I think that it was a good show in that it really pointed out what's important to everybody, especially the troops. And that's something that I think is forgotten all too often. And we have troops all over the world, not just in Iraq. So I ask you tonight to, you know, if you listen and you pray, say a prayer.
And now, here's Tom Farinella.
Sorry about that. Say a prayer for the troops and our great country, that whatever will become, we'll be able to sustain, and that those men and women who are serving overseas are truly kept safe. And I thank you all for joining me. This is the Tom Farinella Radio Show right here at blogtalkradio.com. And we'll be back hopefully tomorrow. But as I remind you...
No more questions.
As I remind you that the more that you take an interest and the more that you take part, and until you speak up, you will never be heard. Good night, everybody.